The Radio Today programme with Audioboo.
We're delighted this week to be in Salford. We're in Media City and we're in one of the many studios inhabited by BBC Radio 5 Live and 5 Live Sports Extra. And we're here to talk to the new controller of both those networks. It's Jonathan Wall. Jono, how are you?
Trevor, how are you? Welcome to Salford.
Well, thank you very much for having
We've
us.
And kept it dry for you. It's all fine
it's
today.
It's lovely weather actually today, isn't it? Congratulations on your appointment.
Thank you.
A time when they used to say deputy heads, assistant heads never get the big jobs. But, you know, there was Ben at Radio 1 and now there's you. So were there nerves?
I spoke to Ben in the process because Ben obviously was going through sort of what I was going through in terms of running it temporarily, but if you like, without the mandate at that stage to kind of run it full time. Yeah, there was nerves. It was the dream job for me, you know, to be honest. So what goes through your head is everything. 95% of the things in your head are everything you need to do to get the job that you really want. And 5% is, what am I going to do if I don't get it? And you're thinking of all of those things, you know. So,
and this is your neck of the woods, isn't it? I mean, I follow you on Twitter. You're always on about Altrincham FC.
Yeah, I bore people to death on Twitter at Altrincham. Yeah.
It's a hometown job, this.
Yeah, it does mean a lot. And you know, I drive past the factory in Trafford Park that my dad used to work in every day on the way to work. And it does mean a lot to me because working for the BBC for me, or the dream of it, was walking past the Oxford Road building in Manchester, thinking that's as close as I get to it. The excitement of wanting to work in that building, going to see Question of Sport being recorded there many years ago, or various children's programmes. And so to think that all of children's television is in Salford, not in London, and stuff like that. It's properly groundbreaking stuff for the BBC, and it needed to do it. We were mostly in London preaching to the rest of the UK. So I genuinely believe in the mission of it. You know, there are issues along the way. There are hurdles along the way to get there. There still are for lots of us. It's still phase one of the process, but it does, it's inside me a little bit. There's a bit of passion around why it's important. Yeah.
It must have been really thrilling to pick up the Sony Radio Academy Award for Station of the Year, and something of a vindication for the move to Salford, because there were many naysayers, weren't there, saying, look, the network just won't be as good. And moving up just before, of all things, the London Olympics, it seemed insane, but you pulled it off.
We did, and we always confidently said that it would be fine, because the way we do big events is you come up, you do a job, you know, you go into town and with a team and do a job there and come out again. So it didn't affect the way we planned the Olympic Games. It didn't make it any harder for us. But it was, as you say, it was our first full year in a new home. And we lost some good people off air, lost one or two people on air. And I actually think losing some people off air didn't do us any harm at all. I think it allowed people to queue around the block to join us and freshen up some of our production. I think the Five Live Sport team is as fresh as a production team now. Lots more women in the team as well, which I think has helped reflect women's sport more effectively. So I think what you try and do is use everything you've got as an advantage in a way. We kept some very good people off air. We brought some in. And I don't think it did us any harm at all, actually, having a real energy around the station. I mean, it's not easy losing people as well who've worked for us for a long time through no other reason than family reasons why they can't come with you. So that's sad, but you have to kind of move on from that and then work out how you kick on. So it did feel like a vindication, actually.
Do you feel as though the North, or if you like, non-London, is better represented on air now?
Definitely. And I don't think it's just about Five Live. There were two things for us, really. One is, as just the Five Live story, let's not be Radio North of England, and let's be very careful about that. And I think in the early stages, to be honest, I think we changed more than we thought we were going to. And just by things like the Vox Pops you do and the guests you get in studios and the experts, it kind of shifted it probably even more than we thought it was going to. And actually, where I thought that Adrian and I would have to sort of push harder at that, we were probably reining it in a little bit in the early stages, because the natural evolvement was a bit quicker than we thought, even in the first few weeks, with a drive time show having perhaps local youth unemployment stories being case studies from Manchester and Liverpool. The accents that come through, you know, it can really change things quite quickly, actually. So we probably were sort of reining that in a little bit, so knowing that we'd already done some of the changes we wanted to do. So there's that part of it. There's also a bigger BBC North story about developing talent across the site and making sure comedies and dramas are successful. So I think Newcastle was one of the areas, or the Northeast, where the BBC needs to do much better. So part of it isn't just about what Five Live does there, but about the sort of comedies and dramas that have done well in the Northeast. So trying to be part of a bigger BBC North story is also whether it's successful or not, if that makes sense.
Put one thing to bed for me. People do say that actually not all of your programmes are coming from Salford. They say, oh, you know, Victoria's often in London, sure, or Sheila's often in London, sure, or whatever. Are they mostly done from here, or are there in fact more shows being done from the South than you would like?
I'm quite happy to put the record straight, because I think we're very confident in what we do. Virtually all of our in-house news and sport programmes, that's the majority of programmes on the station, they're all produced and edited, and a vast majority of them are presented from here. Let's talk about the presenter issue. In phase one of this move to Salford, did we want to lose key talent in the first year or two? Of course we don't. Most of these shows are presented from here. Some of them are from London, and there's different reasons attached to different presenters why that's the case. There'll be a phase two of this project that really is about developing talent, and talent that more often than not lives in this area that we then build the station around over the next few years. But were we going to lose a Victoria because she's going to do some shows from London? Are we going to lose Richard because one every two or three weeks of his programmes is from London for the right editorial reasons? Of course we're not. So I think there's a common sense approach to this, and you know, I've explained this, I'm happy to publicly, I do to the BBC Trust. Everyone, I think, is confident about how we're going about it. But there will be a natural evolvement over the next few years, which needs to be more around a talent base in the north of England. Of course there is. But that will take some time.
Are you now technically part of BBC North rather than BBC News? Have you been moved around in the latest reshuffle?
Five Live sits within BBC North, and most of our programmes are made by a big in-house sport team and a big in-house news team, and then we have indies doing the rest for us. There are dotted lines all over the place about how Five Live sits, because we work in North, we work with our colleagues in radio, we work with sport, we work with news. To me, it doesn't really matter. It's good for us, actually, all of these different lines, because it allows us to talk to everybody across the BBC.
You wouldn't feel happier being part of the BBC radio family?
We are part of the radio family. It's a dotted line. I attend all of Helen Bowden's big meetings.
Do you?
Yeah, okay. I sit on the radio board. My team will. If I'm honest with you, I think there was a danger in the last year that we've drifted too far from the radio family. One of my first things was, let's make sure we're plugged right back in there. Because if we're talking, for example, about the digital future of Five Live, multi-platform, we need to learn from what Radio 1 are doing. We need to be absolutely plugged into that. You need a radio strategy for that, not just a Five Live one that sits within North. So clearly,
but where is local radio now? I mean, it's Radio Manchester upstairs from you. Are they still part of news, or yeah, look, where do they
sit with news, but you know, that doesn't stop Five Live having good relationships with local radio. We do a lot of simulcasts on Sports Extra, for example, on Sports Commentaries, which is us working closely with local radio. And you know, some of our talent development stuff is being done cleverly with local radio in the Northwest. So Sam Walker, for example, someone we've been interested in for a long time, now does a daily show on Radio Manchester. That's, I think, really important for Radio Manchester and for Sam's development as a news presenter. And I think that will improve her. And Sam now does a Sunday breakfast show with Tony Livesey. So I think there are lots of different ways we work with local. To me, it's not really where you're sat in a BBC department. I think sometimes we can make excuses about that, and that can hold us back a bit. I think we should kick on from that and think about where sensible partnerships and collaborations are.
It's the Radio Today programme. I'm Trevor Dan. We're talking to Jonathan Wall, who's the controller of Five Live, and we'll have more with Jono after this little client announcement and then the latest news with Roy Martin.
The Radio Today programme.
In these days of interactivity with the World Wide Web, make it easy for your listeners to share their voices with you via Audioboo. They simply download the app to their mobile device, record a boo, and send to your station. It's that simple. And just to prove a point, this ad was recorded as a boo and sent in from the corner shop. Audioboo, sharing voices with the world.
Speculation surrounding which radio stations or brand will be sold by Global Radio continues this week. Posters on the Digital Spy and even Media UK forums have come up with all sorts of predictions, including the most bizarre. Have a look yourself. Meanwhile, Bauer Media continues its plan of internal cost cutting by replacing Kerrang 105.2 in the West Midlands with Planet Rock from London. Watch out for more developments from Bauer in the non-too-distant future. The biggest story of the week on Radio Today is that Ronnie Irani has left TalkSport Breakfast. His last show was on Thursday the 23rd of May, where he said a quick goodbye, saying that he might be back next Sunday, but wasn't quite sure.
Well, listen, 6 years has gone quickly, mate.
Yeah,
I wish you all the very, very, very best.
Thank you.
Anytime in London, just give me a text, a call, and we're out, we're on it.
Cheers,
and
mate.
We've still got a few things to do together as well, haven't we?
Okay, no problem, thanks a lot.
Okay, Ronnie Irani, that's it. Although you will hear Ronnie next Sunday, is it? Sunday cricket show, Ronnie?
Yeah, possibly this Sunday, yeah. Just got to work out what's going on, to be honest.
Okay, I'm back tomorrow morning from 6 o'clock. Former Liverpool, Real Madrid and England winger.
The BBC iPlay for Radio will allow downloads of radio programmes from 2014. It's the same as television downloads, where you have 7 days to download, 30 days to start listening, and then another 7 days to finish listening. Nice and simple. And finally, Citybeat is looking for a new programme controller in Belfast following the stepping down of John Cairns last week. John's daytime programme has been taken over by Owen Larkin. That's the latest from radiotoday.co.uk. I'm Roy Martin.
The Radio Today programme.
At londonvoiceover.co.uk, O is for out there. We don't believe in sitting still. It's rather dull. Instead, we like getting out and meeting new people to do fun things with. Even go to the beach. I'm Bill Everett, and I'm a London voiceover. Find out more about me at londonvoiceover.co.uk.
Thank you very much, Roy. It's the Radio Today programme. Trevor Dan here with Jono Wall at 5 Live in sunny Salford. I put out a tweet saying I was coming to talk to you, and my word, they've dribbled in.
dribbled in slowly.
I did have one which said, what are you doing for the independent production base in the north? Because there was a lot of talk. In fact, there was a fund at one stage. And I'm told that there is some sort of feeling in the north that the indies are not getting a fair crack of the whip up here, and you're still using too many southern-based indies.
Well, we had for 2 or 3 years a kicker fund to kickstart some activity because, as you know better than I do, Trevor, the indie sector is an interesting one in radio and quite small and very London-based, so I think it was important we triggered some activity. And there are lots of success stories from that, including a new company was formed in Yorkshire because 2 or 3 freelancers came together, and lots of projects. So Joe Meek, for example, and Spark Lab Productions, they are now working heavily on one of our big current projects, which is our Bump Club, our sort of female pregnancy project. I don't think that would have happened without all of the triggers we've done, all of the creative kickers. So I don't necessarily believe in having the Northern-only fund from now on. I think there was a reason to try and bring the sector up here kind of a bit more up to speed. I think there is a natural advantage that some of the companies up here will have just because of their kind of access to us and our team. I think it's up to them to make the most of that, you know, to be fair. I'm about to appoint a new commissioning editor at some point in the next few weeks.
That was going to be my question, because you haven't really filled in behind yourself yet.
There'll be a new team. I've got 2 appointments to make in the team. And as you know from some of the projects that we've done in the last few years, I've been, a passionate supporter of the indie sector. That will stay. In fact, I'm hoping to create more opportunities. The way I want to see indies is, what's the goal of 5 Live in terms of big standout projects where you take news and sport to the next level, collaborations beyond what we might otherwise do? And where do indies fit in that? So rather than just say there's a slot on a Sunday night, I mean, there'll be that kind of commissioning as well. Of course there will. I think what I've learned to try and do is move away from, if you like, a more slot-filling mentality to where can indies help with a bigger story? So Bump Club and 5 Live Green Day, which is a big, massive project about renewable energy, which hopefully will be quite exciting and will involve literally 300 people in the piazza in Salford keeping 5 Live on air, pedalling and rowing and whatever. That's TBI Media who are underpinning that project for us. So 2 of our big news projects of this year are being partnered or underpinned by indies. I think that's quite exciting.
So are you looking for people to come to you still with ideas, or are you developing more of a commissioning cycle like Radio 2 and Radio 4 have?
What I'd like to do is probably get to a position where at least twice a year there is a kind of ad hoc round, if you like. So outside of a commissioning for a 606 slot or whatever, so might there be 2 windows in a year where we say, it doesn't matter where you think it fits into our plan, sell us something that we can then work with. Because Green Day started off quite big, But because of our efforts, we'll become a bit more pan BBC North and work across the site. So we might finish the story off or work with you, excite us with something that we can then take to the next step. So hopefully when I've got my team in place, we can just think about what commissioning rounds mean for us and what that means for the industry. So I'm sure when I put my new appointments in, we'll be going around and talking to everybody. And I'm sure the indie sector, like they always do, will tell us how they want it to be improved. And we'll take that on board and see if we can try and do that.
Another question that came in on Twitter was referring to something that you touched on earlier, which is the diversity of different sports.
Yeah.
And the question was, given the Olympics and the success of your coverage of swimming and archery and all these other things that you would normally touch, are you doing more, as it were, marginal sports? My feeling as a listener is that you are already.
Sure. I'm quite proud about this story in a way, and we probably need to tell it even more than we have done. We've just seen the biggest single change in the culture and delivery of radio sport in their long and proud history over the last year. So here's a headline that might surprise you. In terms of magazine programming, so take away the live sport, which clearly is mostly dominated by football, but magazine programming in Five Live Sport, more than 50% is now non-football. Now, that's unprecedented, because this was a 25% a year ago.
That is a surprising stat.
So we've got a story to tell. There's a new cycling magazine show, Extreme Sports, much more on rugby union, a deal we did to cover more Heineken Cup rugby.
Netball.
Netball, ice hockey. We're doing what we said we were going to do after the Olympic Games. People asked us what we're going to do about cycling. I was quite bullish after the Olympics. I said, we will now treat cycling like a majority sport, not a minority sport. And I think we're doing the Giro d'Italia. We'll do the Tour de France. We've done all the World Championships. We've got a magazine show. I think the audience demand was there. So because the BBC Trust were encouraging us to move in this direction, and I think we've reported back to them, and I think they've been delighted at all the changes we've made, but equally we're not going to rest on our laurels. The next big things this year, Ashes cricket, two big test series, so something non-football that will become a station priority. Commonwealth Games is one of the two big things next summer, if you think about the World Cup football. Commonwealth Games, I think, gives us a great opportunity again to do magazine programming in the build-up to the Commonwealth Games, but then we've got some personalities to get behind to sell, because that is storytelling, isn't it? You know, this is a programme maker. It's not just about covering sports. It's getting behind the stories. That's why the Olympics worked for us. It was telling the stories of the events that made great radio. It wasn't just ticking off boxes.
You brought Adrian up on stage, didn't you, at
yes.
the Sonys when
yep.
you won your award. Yep. And I think there was a lot of very positive feeling in the room about you doing that.
Yeah.
What's the atmosphere like in the BBC now post-Savile? I mean, it took down some pretty good people, Adrian being one of them. How do you feel about that now? And have you sort of moved on from
it? Well, I didn't take him down, to be fair. He's got a good, new, exciting role, you know, creating the World War One content that he's enjoying. But it was a difficult time. It was a difficult time for those of us who knew some of the senior managers involved. Well, there was great pride at where we took the BBC approval rating in this country after the Olympic Games. And it affected us all to see where the BBC was. I spoke quite emotionally, I think, about it at the radio festival last October when we were right in the height of it all. I think we're in a different place now. I think we've got a new DG who has very quickly built a very strong team. And to hear a DG talking about a vision for 10 years' time, not even 5 years' time, is what we needed to do. So it does feel even a different place now from a few months ago. It's not easy, you know. Sat there as controller of Five Live, seeing that Stuart Hall story unfold is not an easy story for us to deal with, because when Stuart Hall was reporting on this network and when we were doing a tribute programme for Stuart Hall, there'll have been victims of Stuart Hall listening to that, feeling, I'm sure, quite distressed about that. And believe me, that hurts us. So it's not been easy.
Because you guys knew nothing about that.
Absolutely nothing about that. Absolutely nothing about that. You know, Stuart was a football, you know, I've only worked with Stuart for the last few years. Stuart was a football reporter for us, was held in great high esteem by the team that he worked with. Of course, we knew nothing about that. So that's quite a difficult period for us to go through. Of course it is. And the only people we think about during that are the victims who come out after the court case. You know, that's who we think about through the whole of that story. So there's been some difficult moments. It does feel like a different BBC. you know, I keep telling my team, we've got to be committed. We've got to listen to our audience, and we've got to absolutely think about everything about the value for money, making programs that they love and that they care about. And but I genuinely feel that the staff in this, they know that. The people love working here. They still see it as a great privilege to work here. So a lot of the stuff you read about, oh, crisis in the BBC and morale issues, I don't see that here. I'm not complacent about that, but I don't see that in terms of what we've got in our workforce up here. I see a committed team that want to make great programmes.
While I was sitting waiting for you, I had a chat with somebody, one of your staff, and I said, how does it compare to working in London? And he just, oh, it's much better. And I thought, well, that's what you need to hear, really, yeah, isn't it? Because there are still plenty of people in your Daily Mail and other places, sure, who would say that is not a conversation that you would have.
Daily Mail just should come in and have a look at the place and see how hard people work and see how much they're enjoying it. Everyone can see those radio studios all on our floor. They can see what we try and do on the network. To me, that's creativity. You sat at a desk 20 yards away from radio studio knowing that what idea you're coming up with there and then you can put on air within the next hour or two. So to actually see those studios, for news to sit alongside, sport to sit alongside a management team, business team, all on one floor, of course we're working better because of that. And genuinely the staff, they tell us that. You know, I'm sure there are moans and groans on the floor like there are in any workplace, but by goodness, generally they're enjoying working in this place.
How much do you listen to Talk Sport these days, Jono?
I listen to lots of stuff, to be honest. I listen to Talk quite a bit. I've spoken to you before about this, Trevor, where I think sometimes Talk were a bit obsessed with us, I felt, a little bit.
And of course, Moz has gone.
Moz has gone. And see, my general view about radio is we'll do the World Cup next year and Talk Sport will do the World Cup next year. Generally, we'll do better on audiences than they will. They'll do well as well, I hope. Okay. Of course, there's room for both of us, and we've proved that. If my sports team are obsessed with Talk Sport and they're obsessed with us, and that's the height of our creative kind of competition and ambition, neither of us will do that well in the World Cup because we've got to think much bigger than that. We've got to think about how people on their iPads, and believe me, how people will consume the next World Cup will be very different from how they consume the last one. Are we thinking about that? Are we working with our colleagues on TV and online to deliver that? Are we working with our colleagues from commercial radio to think about digital listening and mobile phone listening and so on? We need to think much bigger than we've ever thought before. And, you know, I know Liam quite well, who's taken over at Talk, and I'm sure we'll have a drink and we'll share some experiences and maybe give each other some advice, because I'd love to have a different way of working with commercial radio, because we need to think much bigger than we have done before.
I've got one final question here, actually on my iPad, which is to ask you to just speculate about what I see as being the end in sight for the phone-in. I mean, like a lot of stations, a great deal of your output is based around the concept of the phone-in, whether it's Nikki or 606 or whatever it is.
Yep.
Phone-in is beginning to feel like it's on its last legs, I think, and people are beginning to contribute to your shows in different ways. How do you see that developing?
I disagree with the premise that the phone-in... I think the phone-ins have to be special. So, on our first Question Time Extra Time, Stephen Nolan sat alongside John P&R in the studio. John could not believe his eyes at watching those phone lines light up the moment David Dimbleby said, go to 5 Live. 230 calls in that half an hour. So, make it event radio in its own right is what I think we try and do. Your call with Nikki Campbell, with experts on, we deliberately say to that team, that's got to be the most quality informed debate. It's not just a phone in.
Well, it's often a phone out, isn't it?
There's a bit of, well...
I mean, there's a lot of guests set up, one feels, on Nikki's show, and it's none the weaker for that.
No, we do it for a reason. We do it to say the BBC quality on this needs to stand out, because we're lucky enough to have the resource on production. We need to make sure it's informed debate that will then... But we can't do that without also hearing from the audience. And I look at the numbers that come in on those phone-ins every day, and they're often 200, 300 calls on child benefit at 9 o'clock in the morning. The numbers astonish me, actually, about how many come in. I mean, sometimes they're as big as you might get for a 606 football phone-in. The Question Time Extra Time was 11:30 at night to get over 230 calls. Says that, people might still... I think it's about maintaining different approaches, because you're right to say we can't just think about that. I mean, we have to improve on social media. We have done. Twitter needs to showcase our best bits every day. I should be able to go on Twitter and see the 20 best bits of my own station just by going on Twitter. And we're trying to get into that place now. We've needed to catch up a bit. indies have led the way a little bit, to be honest. Our in-house teams have had to do a bit of catching up. We're in a much better place than we were. When I came in as temporary controller in October, it was my first thing. My first thing to sport was, where's your multi-platform plan? Because you've got a whole team downstairs in sport online. I don't see you working well enough together. And we've started to crack that. We've really started to crack that. From Gary Lineker mentioning big football commentaries the next day on Five Live, basics like that we needed to do better, to just editorially linking up with a website better. Of course, we need to do that. But if phone-ins can still be event radio, which is how I see it, then absolutely they've still got a good place.
This has been the Radio Today programme. Thank you to Jono and to Five Live for hosting it for us. Jamie Taylor has produced it, and it's been a TDC production for Radio Today. We'll have something very similar next week.
The Radio Today programme with Audioboo.